The views expressed on this podcast are those of the participants, not of Reuters News.
So there's definitely a lot of concerns around central banks. At the moment, they sound calm, but since they're going to cut interest rates anyway, at some point, they might just accelerate if they see that the sector is starting to crack.
Empty offices and shopping malls struggling to find tenants. This is the sad state of commercial property. How banks, central banks, and investors can navigate this crisis is the focus of this week's Views Room. Welcome back to the Views Room, a podcast from Reuters Breaking Views, where columnists from around the world talk about the big stories of the week. I'm your host, Amy Donlan, coming to you from London. Commercial property is a market that appears to be in crisis. In the US, there's a staggering 20% vacancy rate following a post-pandemic boom in hybrid working. Meanwhile, in Europe, the collapse of embattled Austrian real estate group Signa is spreading to banks like Deutsche Pfandbriefbank in Germany, and even forced the departure of the CEO of Swiss wealth manager Julius Baer. I'm fortunate to be joined by two Breaking Views powerhouses, John Foley, who leads Breaking Views financial coverage globally, as well as Francesco Guerrera, global head of economics at Breaking Views. So, Francesco and John, the three of us have all been writing about commercial property, and such is the scale of what seems to be a bit of a crisis. But John, I think I'll start with you. When did you first start seeing cracks appear in commercial property? Because we obviously, the pandemic, all the offices emptied out, shopping malls, you know, didn't have anybody in them. When did you start to think about this as actually an area that would be problematic for banks and elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, this problem has been creeping up for a long time. So we've known for quite a long while that vacancy rates are pretty high in office buildings. Across America, I think nationally, the vacancy level at the moment is about 20%, according to Moody's, which is a record. And it's even worse in some cities like Houston's about 26%. New York is relatively lower, about 12%, but we know that people aren't going back into the office and that some companies are now starting to downsize. They're starting to say, well, we only need 2/3 of the space that we used to. So the question was when that started feeding into the financial system, and specifically through banks and other lenders who have basically issued mortgages that are secured by office buildings. We're starting to see that now. What we're seeing is actual concrete evidence of banks in particular making painful adjustments to reflect the fact that the properties that they lent against aren't worth what they once were. So we've seen wobbles in the banking sector, particularly a bank called New York Community Bancorp, which has just received an equity injection from a bunch of financiers, including former Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin. NYCB took a big charge about a month ago against some of its property investments, and that sent investors into a bit of a panic. So we've seen this coming for a while in the distance. Now it's finally arriving on the doorstep.
And I mean, it's interesting, actually, the bank angle on this, because I remember, you know, when we were talking about the fact that hybrid working was booming. And, you know, if you just look around an office, you know, on a Friday, like, do you need all this space? And is there a better way of doing it? And I remember speaking to the listed companies that, you know, that own offices, and they were always like, no, we have like prime offices. We're where you want to be. Even if you're downsizing, you'll still want to be in one of our buildings. But I think the banks, you're right, were lending to maybe buildings that were not, you know, didn't fit this bill and were on the outskirts of cities. And I think that's what is very, very interesting about this whole situation. But John, I wondered as well, like, how immediate is this problem, right? Because these loans, they're not like yearly loans. They do take out loans for a few years. I mean, what is the kind of refinancing cliff that these landlords are sort of facing?
So Amy, you hit on a really interesting point there, actually, about the difference between the kind of big picture and some of the small, detailed, granular stuff. But if you stand back and you look at the big numbers, they're basically, yeah, there is a refinancing cliff of sorts. Depending on who you ask, the Mortgage Bankers Association here in the US thinks it's about $1.5 trillion of lending that's going to have to be refinanced or paid back this year and next. And there are bigger numbers out there if you go further out. So there's a consultancy called TREP that thinks there's about $3 trillion coming due by 2028. So those are the big numbers. And it's worrying because the value of buildings has fallen as interest rates have risen. So you might be able to refinance some of the loan, but maybe the banks won't lend as much as they did before because the value of your building has fallen. And then you've got a problem. You've got to find the money some other way or you're going to default. But the really interesting thing about all of this is that every building is kind of different. Every town is different. Every kind of property is different. So it's very difficult to see exactly where the property problems are going to spring up. So we saw, for example, a listed fund managed by private equity firm KKR. Its shares collapsed. It had to cut its dividend. And it was because of problems with basically like a couple of properties where they took write-downs that they kind of flagged in advance, but they were specifically related to individual buildings. Now, with banks, we don't actually see which building is lent against by which bank. They don't have to go through that in fine detail. So you can't always see where the issues are going to pop up. It's kind of like that game where you have to hit the rodents on the head and you don't know which hole the rat is going to pop out of. And that's what investors are currently fighting with.
Absolutely. And Francesco, if I could bring you in here as well, because you were obviously writing about this, which is really important from the central bank perspective, which is that I think central banks don't really know where inflation is going. It's been very difficult for them to sort of talk about interest rates and, you know, where this is all going. But obviously, this has a huge impact on the people who are trying to borrow money against these buildings. And the hope, I mean, I wrote a piece about this recently, is that certainly from the bank's perspective in Europe, they're sort of hoping interest rates fall, more people come back to the office, and by the time they have to refinance these loans, things will be in a better position, maybe not fixed entirely, but certainly not as bad as they look right now. I just wondered if you could talk us through, yeah, what are the central banks sort of thinking about this situation?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. The problem with that rather rosy scenario that the European property developers want to paint is that they're not in control of the time. The central banks are, right? So central banks for 2 years, they couldn't stand still for a second. I mean, they just raised interest rates higher and higher to fight this kind of unprecedented spike in inflation. But now they've gone very quiet, right? And they're actually talking about the fact that there is no cost to waiting to cut interest rates. They can keep it higher for longer in case inflation resurfaces. The reality is there is a cost, and the cost is visible in commercial real estate because as these loans come due, the property developers and the bank have to refinance them at a higher rate because rates are much higher than when they were first signed off. So in Europe, we've already seen some problems among, particularly there's a Swedish property group called SBB. There is also an Austrian property group called Signa. And there's naturally a small German bank that got in trouble with US properties. I say natural because this is exactly what happened in the financial crisis in 2008. Now, the issue here is how long will it take before the central bank start cutting rates? And is that before the loans become due? Just to give you an idea, the funding gap estimated here in 2024, between 2024 and 2026, is 90 billion euros. That's the difference between the value of the loan or the interest payments when it was first signed off and if the property developers have to refinance them between now and then. Naturally, if interest rates come down between that within that period, the funding gap will decrease, but it's not a given.
Absolutely. And I mean, John, if I could go back to the US banks, do they have this sort of rosy idea? Because I can understand in a way why European banks are thinking about things the way they are, because there is actually, on the continent anyway, and in London, quite a big push to get workers back into the office and get more workers back into the office more regularly. And as you say, ECB has talked about cutting interest rates. So, you know, it's not too far out of the realm of possibility that that works out for them. Is there that same, are you seeing those same kind of movements from US companies?
Well, I guess the question is, do you think there's going to be a financial crisis? Do banks think there are going to be a financial crisis? And I think the answer to that at the moment is no. And one reason is just that the banks, particularly the large banks, have got very large exposures to real estate, but in the context of how large their balance sheets are, and I'm thinking of the JP Morgans, the Wells Fargos, the Bank of Americas, the exposures are quite small. It's very difficult to see how even a relatively large hit to, say, office properties would affect a bank like Bank of America, which has, you know, less than 5% of its assets in those kind of loans. For smaller banks, it's different. They have more of the lending. I think about 2/3 of the commercial real estate lending that is in banks is in smaller banks. So when things go wrong, it is more likely that could bring a bank down. And I've spoken to people out there who are expecting to see maybe as many as 500 banks go down over the next few years. That, by the way, is out of more than 2,000 banks in the US, so we're still going to be, you know, we're still going to be okay for banks. But the question is, can those failures be managed in a way, when they do happen, that it doesn't destabilize the whole system, and particularly the larger banks that have the lion's share of deposits?
So, John, are the banks being quite generous in their provisions? Are they being cautious, given what we're discussing about the fact that there are, you know, there are two different scenarios that maybe play out here?
Banks do take provisions. They do set aside profit in advance for loans going bad. And at the moment, they've got about double the amount of their bad loans set aside in what they call allowances. And that's been falling a bit because as the bad loans go up, that coverage ratio goes down. But there is some padding. Now, banks like NYCB, of course, are raising more money so that if more stuff goes bad, they have enough to lay aside more provisions without it, you know, pushing them over the brink.
And I mean, Francesco, if I could just maybe I'll end with both of you, but I just wanted to ask you this question. If you did start to see an awful lot of vulnerability in this sector and, you know, banks coming under pressure, do you think that would cause the central banks to maybe act a bit quicker? Is that sort of the next chapter here, is that they will pay more, that they're paying attention to this area?
Yes, central banks are definitely saying that they're paying attention, and they're also saying they're not seeing a lot of problems, a bit like what John was saying. Certainly, they would come under a lot of pressure to do something if there was, say, a spectacular failure or problems, especially, I would say, in Europe, where there's a huge concern around these issues, given past records. And of course, they already embarked on a path that will lead to lower interest rates. So it would be easier for them to cut interest rates and say that they weren't influenced by the problems in the commercial property sector. They just accelerated, or that there was always their flying path, as if you like. So there's definitely a lot of concerns around central banks. At the moment, they sound calm. But since they're going to cut interest rates anyway, at some point, they might just accelerate if they see that the sector is starting to crack.
Yeah, it's worth noting that, you know, the folks in charge don't seem that concerned. Jay Powell, who's the chair of the US Federal Reserve, has said that he thinks the risk to the credit system from real estate is manageable. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has said something similar. And about half the total commercial property loan exposure is not in banks. It's in pension funds, it's in securitized products, it's in credit funds. And it's slightly less troubling when that goes bad because, you know, it's still worrying for the people who put the money in, but it doesn't necessarily ping back onto the banking system, or not directly. It's not such a systemic issue. So, you know, aside from the fact that the central bank is not supposed to cut rates just to make life easy for banks, it's absolutely not supposed to do that, and probably doesn't need to, because the risk is quite dispersed through the system. So right now, it's a worry for investors in certain banks. It's not a systemic catastrophe.
Well, very interesting, and definitely more to watch. John, Francesco, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for tuning in. This podcast was produced by Oliver Tashlich in London. Subscribe to The Views Room and our sister podcast, The Exchange, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. Catch up with our latest views and much more on breakingviews.com and on X, where our handle is @breakingviews.
I'm Kim Vanell. Join me every morning for a roundup of what's happening at home and around the world. From the front line in Ukraine.
Extraordinary how these people adjust and even laugh when you take cover.
To the heart of US politics.
When Trump said that he expected to be arrested, it seems like he was trying to get ahead of the story.
We bring you everything you need to know in 10 minutes. For your essential daily briefing, follow Reuters World News wherever you get your podcasts.